Thank you. So we have the pleasure of having Reverend Dr. Lori Bolster with us again, and everybody here is familiar with Lori, so I won't do a long introduction, but what a treat to have you back, Lori, and looking forward to hearing you talk about the Science of Mind textbook.
All right. Well, this is kind of a hoot talking with y'all because I really do view this group as just a bunch of my peers. And we've all been doing this for plenty long enough. We understand it. We've talked about it. We've thought about it. We've practiced it. And now this particular book, or this chapter in the book, is about what it does. This is chapter, I think it's chapter 3 in the Science of Mind textbook. So basically, this chapter says God is all there is, God is all about love, and then there's the law. And so, whatever's going on, doesn't matter who's doing it or what's thinking or anything about it, it plays out in the law. The end. And so, that was the short talk, Val, when we were talking earlier, that this could be a really short talk. Because that's about what this chapter is. And so I added a little few who are more words. And so this book was written by a fella that had been doing a whole lot of reading and a whole lot of thinking. He's basically a philosopher. Ernest Holmes started late 1800s and was thinking about spirituality. Grew up poor, grew up in a destitute kind of situation, struggling. They were kind of Baptist, except that his parents didn't go in for the hell and damnation part of it. It was just God and God's love. And so he grew up with that kind of an understanding. But then as he went along reading, he was reading everything under the sun, including materials on metaphysics, on what the mind could do, the mind could help heal the body, and reading Eastern religion information like the Vedantas. He was reading everything under the sun. Eventually, he ended up in Los Angeles, where he started talking about these things that he was coming to the understandings about, and became a relatively famous speaker. You know, he could fill auditoriums with hundreds and even, you know, over 1,000 people. And so he wrote Science of Mind, the Science of Mind book in 1922, published it in 26. They did a big revision in 38. I don't never have compared the two. And that book, I think, is still in print. I think it's still going. And so that's the background of this text. What we're talking about was published originally 1926 by a fellow coming out of Christianity in a world that's mostly Christian with some Jews. And he's in introducing this concept to a group of people that don't think this way. To them, most of the people he's talking to believe that there is a God and that God runs everything, and there is a the Son of God is Jesus. And some people figure the only way to get to God is through Jesus, and that you have to believe certain things about Jesus and about Christianity, etc., or Judaism. And so he's explaining this to people who really, for whom this concept of what we believe is absolutely foreign, and they can't get their minds around it. They've had a belief since childhood. Went to Sunday school, they learned how religion goes. And so it's a challenge for many, many people. That doesn't mean they're pushing back. I suppose some people did. But just to understand, this is a huge shift in thought. And so this chapter clarifies that all there is going is this God, God force, and God is everything. And that therefore any, you know, as a creative process happens, the creative process is totally impersonal. It doesn't matter who or what is doing the thinking or the creation. It will play out in law. Now, you have to figure that there is a certain amount of commitment behind some of these thoughts and these intentions, that if it's just a whoosh through the brain, that may not have a whole lot of impact on what plays out in the law, because the law requires it to play out. And, I always talk about Carolyn Mace saying that, we think that we're going to change things with our mind when we can't focus on a single thought for 10 seconds. Like, yeah, well, that's true. I'm not sure how much of an impact what we're thinking has if we don't really have any control over our minds. If our minds are just doing whatever they're doing all the time, and then we think, oh, I'm going to do this, or I really want this. Ta-da, I claim it to be true. Anyway, so that's what this chapter is talking about, that there is God, and God is love, and there's that creation power. And the law, which says it has to play out no matter what or who's using it, and that therefore there is this power that is there that we can use. Well, okay. Those may all be true words. But when you really think of what's behind that for humans, what does that mean for humans? Basically, we're living in this world, and if we're not paying attention, we have an unguarded sensory contact with everything within our world, with people, with events, with the air we breathe. And we're just beings, live beings, floating through this life. And there are things that happen to us that, we want different. That's not good, or that's not satisfying, or that's not what I really want, or we want something different. And it's going on all the time. If we get up in the morning, well, the situation right now isn't right. I have to put some clothes on, or I have to brush my teeth, and I'm okay with these things. And I have to go out. Oh, it's cold. I have to, these things that are going on all the time, where we're making adaptations to make whatever's going on better, or how we really want it right now. And this goes on all the time. And then we have thoughts that our ego gets a hold of that we really want different. And these are things maybe and things going on that we can't control. I do not believe that if somebody gets in a car wreck, that that was part of their intention for their life. I don't believe, I just don't believe that. I think that there's a certain level of, I can't remember the name of that game where you punch the little buttons on the side and the little ball goes banging around, little flippers in there. It's not ping pong. I can't remember the name of the game. But anyway, and the little ball goes around there, and little flippers are going around. The ball doesn't really have much control over what's going on. And sometimes that's kind of how life can feel. That we're just kind of going along, going along. Now, for us who have a practice and have a way of being and have some awareness, we may not feel that all the time. But the possibility is that on occasion we have that kind of a, whoa, how did this happen? I didn't want this, and this is what's happening. We live in bodies, and things happen to our bodies that we didn't have intention about, or we didn't think we did. So it's really. And this brings me back to the thing I think I've mentioned here before about karma. Karma for us is not so much about what happened that brought us to here. It's about now what? What kind of a life are we going to create going forward? How are we going to use our fine mind? Basically, we have to deal with all the factors that are going on around us in our existence that involves our bodies being in this world. And sometimes we get this real hot circus going on in our brains about how it's supposed to be and how I want it to be and how it's not. And what's important to do is like, wait a minute, let's turn off this little hot circus, woo woo, and just shh. Can we just cool this down so we get that cool clarity of mind that allows our intended creation, what we really want, what is good for us, to be able to flow through us and through us through our action. And into our lives and our experience. Holmes had been studying, reading everything by everybody, including other religions, about metaphysics and the mind's ability to change our circumstances. And he arrived at an understanding that there is this presence, and it fills us. It is us. We embody the essence of God. We're going to call it God. And then it's all about these relationships of thoughts and experiences. That relationship. And when we say things like, God is all there is, and that there's a power greater than us and we could use it. Yeah, those are words, and they may be true words, but those words are happening up in our cognitive processor. Those are thoughts that, yeah, that we're going to do this. But what we're really getting to is the embodiment of this understanding. That Holmes came to the understanding that we are the authority over our own selves. And that having faith in this creative process, this God, God essence, this presence, is both the question, like, well, how are we going to live? And the answer is how we're going to live, how this is going to go. And as we take control of this, as we attend to it, and understand that we are this, then as we change our minds within the divine presence, we change our minds, then that plays out in law. We're talking about a spiritual presence and an infinite mind in the universe. And I read somewhere that somebody was talking about there has to only be a single infinite presence, a single infinity. Because if you have two of them, then they have boundaries. Like this is that one and this is that. That's not infinite. They're limited. So there can't be more than one infinite. Here's one single infinity that is that presence, whatever you call it. And so it's source energy, it's universal energy, it's divine presence, it's divine union, divine unity. We have a divine union with whatever this energetic power is, this creative force, a divine union with creation. And so there are no limitations. There are no boundaries. When somebody says, well, you are whole, perfect, and complete. Well, if we're of this divine energy, this divine unity, then yeah, whole, perfect, and complete. But what does that even mean? Sometimes we take things across in a superficial fashion that, yeah, we're talking divine presence, divine divinity. There is no spot where God is not. That saying. And that thinking is creative. So thinking qualitatively, any kind of thinking can be a prayer. And then we're talking mind in action. And so now I'm going to read to you because I like reading to you. I like reading Holmes to you. Here we go. The principle restated. Let us restate our principle. We are surrounded by infinite possibility. It is goodness, life, law, and reason. In expressing itself through us, it becomes more fully conscious of its own being. Therefore, it wishes to express through us. It wishes to express through us. As it passes into our being, it automatically becomes the law of our lives. Automatically becomes the law of our lives. It can pass into expression through us only as we consciously allow it to do so. We have something to do with this. We are the authority over our own lives. Therefore, we should have faith in it and its desires, and its ability to do for us all that we shall ever need to have done. Since it must pass through our consciousness to operate for us, we must be conscious that it is doing so. The one who wishes to demonstrate some particular good must become conscious of this particular good if one wishes to experience it. Therefore, one must make one's mind receptive to it and must do this consciously. There's no hocus pocus. And so, we're talking about, I get a kick out of this combination, this divine presence, divine unity. And we say that there's no spot that God is not. And then we say that we're whole, perfect, and complete as is. What do they mean when it comes to human lives? We're talking presence and power, unity of action, relationship with presence. It's a relate prayer. Prayer and what you're doing with your mind is a relationship, a oneness with, and it's everything and everyone. And we're talking about a sacred consciousness, not just conscious, I'm awake, I'm alive, I'm moving around, but a sacred consciousness where we realize, we acknowledge, we accept, we embody this divine presence and the unity, the divine union. And so, if this divine union is our birthright, why would we be nonchalant about it? Why would we just flip off some of these sayings that we have? Like, you're whole, perfect, and complete as is. What does that mean? What comes with that? What are the roots under that? Oh my. It's not just a declaration. It's an embodiment of divine presence. And so then we come up to, how do you get some control over our minds? Because our minds can spin off in all kinds of directions. We could watch it happen coming into and going out of the recent elections. Like, whoa, there was a lot of mind spinning going on. People who would say they just can't stop thinking, they can't, they're caught up in this, they're emotionally caught in it, and they can't. There you are. But we can do it about a lot of things. Things happen in our lives over which they just happen. You know, somebody's up and dies, or something happens and it takes you off your normal life path. You break an ankle, or just something happens with how you normally spend your time, and now for some reason you can't. And things change over which it's pretty tough to say, yeah, I had control over that. Maybe we do, and maybe we don't. And so if divine unity is our birthright, how do we not be nonchalant? How do we not just take life for granted? How do we gain more control over our minds on a routine basis? So now this, I'm not talking about a whole lot of work where every day we're thinking, what am I going to think now? How am I going to think now? How am I going to, not that. I'm talking about making it just part of who we are, that we accept and the reality. We understand and accept the reality of just how things are. Yep, that's how things are. I still get a kick out of Byron Katie saying, do you really want to argue with reality? Seems like a kind of a terrific waste of time. Yes, I don't like it that there's this car parked in my parking spot. Rawr! You know, really? You're going to argue about that? Yep, sure enough, it is. We also want to cultivate a wholesome attention to how our minds and bodies and feelings and responses flow during the course of our life experiences. So we want to, okay, yep, sure enough, this is how it is. And now, how am I being at the moment, moment to moment to moment? And that we want to maintain some positivity in our minds so that, you know, why would we be nonchalant about letting our minds go down a, you know, pit? Oh, there you go. Come back. Come on back here. The sun is out. I actually feel good. Now, get some control over and attend to what's going on with me. And do, is this okay? Or would I want to do something different with how I'm being and responding or thinking or feeling? And that we get some positive control over some of this on a regular, natural, not, you know, gotta hammer this out and do this right. That's not what it's about. We want to make this mind flow kind of like breathing. That we know what's going on with our bodies and our feelings and our mind and our responses and what we're thinking about and what's going on and how we're responding to things. We want it to be a natural, comfortable, positive, uplifting, growing, developing, evolving flow of life. Well, Ernest Holmes developed spiritual mind treatment. step one, two, three, four, five. And then eventually he crossed paths with the teacher of teachers, Emma Curtis Hopkins. She was a metaphysician. She read all that. She was a terrific, massive creator, basically, of new thought. And she was a total mystic. And she introduced Ernest Holmes to mysticism. He worked with her for about a year. And somehow the mystical part of this just goes, whoosh. My experience with people in this teaching, this belief, is that folks get focused on affirmation, that I can have something to say about how my life goes, that we do spiritual mind treatment, we do affirmations, post little post-its on the bathroom mirror, things like that. These are all cognitive processor sorts of things. Well, what happens with your cognitive processor, this frontal lobe, your thinking, is supported by the rest of your brain and supported by this, what kind of the quality of this divine union with the creative power, with source energy, God. What kind of relationship do you have there? Because a whole lot can happen in the top part of your brain that is just disconnected. Routine, inattentive, rote, stuff we just do, reactions. But if we don't have a chance to really unify, to really enmesh, to embody, then what are we running off? And my mind says it's kind of like it can become mechanical. And it's like taking care of a car. I'm going to take care of a car. Well, taking care of a car means I'm going to wash the windows. I'm going to wash the car, make sure there's air in the tires. Maybe I'll check the oil. Make sure that when the doors close, they're actually closed. And vacuum once in a while and put some squirter fluid in the wipers. And this is taking care of the car. Well, what about all the rest of it that is really the life force, the process of this car operating? It's a really superficial comparison, I know. But if we're just into spiritual mind treatment, making declarations, affirmations, knowing that I'm whole, perfect, and complete as is, and then just going about my business, the mysticism is what takes care of what's really going on here. And so I don't know the practice of the people in this room. Some of you may be truly there. But I find that a lot of times people aren't. We get into a rut, a way of, not a rut, but a way of being. And we don't pay so much attention to the rest of this. And so while we want to understand the reality of the world and gaining more control over our minds, maintaining positivity rather than sliding easily into negative things, we need to take care of that divine union. And that takes time to do that. And it takes a contemplative practice. It takes the mysticism, whether it's mindfulness meditation, contemplative prayer, loving kindness meditations, something where a couple of times a day, every day, we just sit. People talk about 20 minutes, that's nice, but if 5 minutes is better than nothing, and the more committed we are to this, where a couple times every day, we just sit in this divine open unification. Sometimes music will help because it just lets the mind stop thinking. This is not an analytic meditation. This is a listening, just open meditation to be with. And what we know is physically, when people are doing that, when the mind just goes to quiet silence, that's when the brain does some housekeeping. Let's go of things that don't need to be happening. strengthens other synapses that do, move some of its power and abilities into another part of the brain because this brain doesn't need it. So we'll move it over here. That kind of thing goes on in when the brain is quiet. When the mind is quiet, the brain can take care of itself. But also then, the more committed we are to that kind of a practice, the richer our lives and everything else about them become, including our ability to control our thinking and our emotional responses. It's an integrating practice. If something's off about us, this kind of ongoing practice will help us bring it back without it becoming a big deal. And it, you know, then you get a sense of back into wholeness and alignment. You develop a routinely healthy sense of self. We turn into who we really are when the externals aren't do-do-do-do-do or our fine mind, you know, do-do-do-do-do. We turn into, we evolve into who we really are. And then we bring that divine relationship into how we are in the world. We just show up. And there's a transformation in consciousness. You evolve into a different kind of a being, living from your heart mind, living as who you really are. And that spills over into the world. And is it a benefit to anyone and everyone around you as well as to you? And so that's what I'm encouraging. And it's not a 5-minute talk after all. And I'll stop there. Thank you.